Mike Pence names the first members of his new cabinet. Why so many holdovers from the Daniels administration? The Pence inaugural plans, Glenda Ritz snubbed, and Richard Lugar honored by the president. That plus why Purdue's new football coach is out of the ordinary and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending December 7,
2012. Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
This week, Governor-elect Mike Pence named some of the first members of his new cabinet. All three worked in some capacity for the Daniels administration. Pence previously named a budget director who also worked in the Daniels administration. His chief of staff, Bill Smith, comes from his congressional staff. Pence asked for patience as he continues to sort through applicants and fill jobs.
There are 28,511 state employees. There are some 60 agencies. That we are working in good faith to evaluate and to decide leadership.
To what degree will the Pence administration resemble the Daniels administration? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel, Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanes, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, Did you expect more turnover in state government?
Actually, I didn't, because, I mean, Mike Pence has so few ties to Indiana. All his experience has been in Washington. He'd be smart to rely on the people from the Pence administration, from the Daniels administration that wanted to hold over, while he finds out, you know, where the state house restrooms are and all the rest of that that he's going to need to learn.
Actually, his transition office is right across from a men's room. I think he's got it handled.
There you go.
Be careful what you say, Mike.
Is it interesting, Mike, that his first announcements here are all holdovers?
I don't see any big surprise here. I mean, you know, they're talking about continuity and trying to build on what the Daniels administration did. Yeah, the most important announcement he made, of course, was his chief of staff, and Bill Smith's been with him forever. And you need somebody in that position that you know is totally loyal to what you're doing and know you inside and out and
alter
know what
ego.
You're going to do. Yeah, sure. And I think that's critically important. And there are other people who've worked hard for him through the years who've also been named to other positions so far. So, but they've got over, I think they said close to 1,000 resumes they're going through. You know, anytime there's a transition like this, it's like trying to drink from a fire hose, all the people that want to work in the administration. So they're in the process of going through those. And I think that continuity moving forward is pretty important.
He is at the moment, Mike Pence, traveling the state, doing a little thank you tour, which is something similar to what Mitch Daniels did 8 years ago. 8 years ago, there was a lot of change, and Daniels was moving quickly and making a lot of public announcements. It's a little different this time.
Well, you don't have the change in party affiliation, and that's why I think you see some of the holdovers as well. If you had, as was the case, for instance, when Evan Bayh first took office after what it had been 16, 20 years of Republican control of the governor's office at that point. The same thing happened when Mitch Daniels took office. So that's why you're seeing wholesale changes in those instances in personnel and not so much here. And I'll give you another reason. There are probably 60 or 65 plus reasons why these picks make sense, and that's probably the approval rating that Mitch Daniels will have when he goes out of office. If this administration had been scandal-ridden. Clearly, there are some problems with some agencies,
right.
But these are not the people who were pegged to be responsible for those problems. But if this administration had been gone out of office in an unpopular fashion, I think you'd see more changes. But when you have whatever the
sure.
pick what it's going to be, 65% approval rating, why not ride that to the crest of that wave?
So is continuity a good thing?
I think in the cases that he's chosen so far, it clearly is. I think he, you know, when he chose Chris Atkins, who, you know, has worked in OMB before but had been out of the administration, worked in the campaign, you look at the other people he's chosen. You talked about the problem agencies. One of them is Department of Revenue, and Mike Alley is staying on there. And I think that in this case, it's very good. You know, it just makes sense in a lot of, for a lot of reasons that, that we've talked about. What I'm most impressed with, Jim, is that last week you were complaining about the fact that Mike Pence hadn't done any press conferences, and then first of the week he has a press conference. So I'm impressed with the power that Jim Shella holds.
Yeah, I don't think I have anything to do with that. All right, Pence also unveiled his inauguration plans this week. They call for a weekend of events leading up to the formal ceremony. It's set for Monday, January 14th, outside the State House. It's open to anyone, but you have to register to attend. The Saturday before the inauguration, Pence is planning a family event at the Dallara IndyCar Factory. Later that night, an inaugural ball will be held in downtown Indianapolis. Sunday, there will be an inaugural praise and worship service. Mike McDaniel, is that a first?
Actually, I don't think it is. I think there have been other services like that in the past. But I think it's neat that they're having a whole weekend that anybody who wants to participate can, especially the family event. I think that's unique at the Dallara Factory and Speedway. That'll be fun. And then I was impressed by the fact that the inaugural ball was $75 for individuals and $150 for a couple. I thought that was very reasonable so that a lot of people can go compared to what they usually are for that kind of thing. And so they're trying to make it, and you can see Karen.
There's usually they're high priced because you're trying to pay for the event.
Oh, and you're trying to raise money for the party.
And he's set up a committee to help pay for this, aside from his campaign.
And I think it's also interesting and important that Karen Pence is very active in planning all of these details, and she's terrific at that kind of thing. She's got a hand in the Indiana Society Ball in Washington, D.C. around the presidential inaugural. She's one of the co-chairmen, I think, of that event. And so she's good at that kind of thing, and it's going to be good to have her involvement to make sure that people from all walks of life can participate.
All right, the last time we had an outdoor inaugural, it was Frank O'Bannon.
And it was bitter cold.
Eight degrees, wasn't it?
Yeah, and the next time but for his re-election, it was
actually
held indoors.
Yeah, they had a contingency plan to move indoors.
That's
they
good.
Well, 8 degrees is what the high was that
yeah,
day.
It was cold. It was cold.
Yeah.
I mean, it's nice that they're doing the weekend of events and family events, and it's low enough budget, but I think they ought to plan really, I mean, you can't predict what it's going to be like here in January the 14th. I mean, it could be sleeting outside for all we know. It'd be nice if it were great weather, but anyway, the events look nice, and that's a great thing.
Okay. He's also, the Pence family's moving into the governor's residence. He made it clear.
Oh, my God. It's so substandard. I hope it isn't too traumatic for him.
Oh, my. The election's over, Ann.
I'm just saying.
They're looking forward to it. I think they really are.
Well, it's a nice house. They should look forward to it.
It is a very nice house, and it's not a surprise that they're going to move into it. You know, the Governor Daniels' decision was controversial and unusual. You know, the governor's residence exists because it's a place not just for the governor's family, but also for the state to use for state functions. And in previous administrations, it's been used for some public functions as well. So I think it's great. It'll be nice to have somebody back in the governor's residence full time again. But one thing I would suggest for anybody who's covering that event for the inaugural, if it is cold, take a pencil. Because pens didn't work very well when it was almost 0 degrees out there that day.
This may hit your hands.
No, that's true,
it's
too.
It's tough to hold a pencil in a glove.
Maybe this explains why Mike Pence, in his role in Congress, was slow to join the fight against climate change and global warming, because he knew at some point you may need that to have an outdoor event like this and boost your chances of decent weather. No? A little bit of a stretch?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
My arm doesn't go that far.
Nice job, Gumby.
All right.
Cross global warming jokes off the list. No more.
Time now, just make them funny. Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we post an unscientific poll question in connection with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, is an outdoor inaugural a good idea? Your choices are A, yes, B, no, or C, if there's a plan B. Last week's question was, should Indiana legalize marijuana? 36% said yes, 62% said no, 2% said What was the question again? To take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Despite an outcry from teachers this week, a controversial plan by outgoing State Superintendent Tony Bennett will become a reality. The State Board of Education approved changes in teacher licensing requirements. Glenda Ritz, who will take over for Bennett next year, asked the board to delay action until after she's in office next month. Nevertheless, the board approved the changes on a 9-2 vote. The new rules mean college graduates can get their licenses without completing teacher training programs. Among those who objected, IUPUI Dean Pat Rogan.
Teaching experience in higher education does not equate to K-12 classroom experience. No content area should be allowed to obtain a license by merely taking a test. With the increasing need for highly qualified teachers of students learning English, we cannot afford to send individuals with absolutely no preparation into schools. All content areas should require rigorous, competency-based, field-based programs of study.
John Katzenberger, is that an indication of the sort of influence that Glenda Ritz will have for the next 4 years?
You know, I'm not ready to say that yet. She may very well have a lot of influence when it's all said and done, but it is an indication of the kind of difficulty she's going to have. I mean, she's definitely paddling upstream. It's a very swift current moving against her, and she's going to have to be fighting every day for anything from her perspective and her point of view if she wants to have that influence that she would hope to have.
Should the State Board of Education have waited?
Apparently, what,
out of courtesy.
What was it about? 9-2, 7-2?
9-2.
So nine people thought not, two thought they should, so I guess it doesn't really matter what I think. I guess there would be the suggestion typically that if you have a new superintendent and he or she asks things to be put on hold, I suppose the quote-unquote courteous thing to do would be to wait, but since when has courtesy necessarily been part of policymaking in this state or any state around the country? Mm-hmm. I mean, you have... Part of this is momentum, too. I mean, yes, we have a change in that position, but you also have a state board that has been dealing for months now with these policy questions. And it's not as if they just got up that morning and said, let's do something today. So I'm guessing they would say, why squander, you know, six, seven, eight months of work on this and study and whatever momentum is here to do nothing.
They're not losing their positions or anything. No. There was no reason not to wait. There was no reason not to wait. It was discourteous, and it's a bad idea on top of it. You know, Glenda Rich has said that she is not opposed to alternative... But the
likelihood in that case is that they would wait, and they would let her take office, and then the result would be the same, right?
You could have some legitimate discussion. I mean, she's one of the few board-certified teachers in the entire state of Indiana. She believes that teachers need to be certified. And the idea that all you have to do is pass a subject matter test and you're able to communicate with students is crazy. And they know it, too, because now they're talking about a 5-year license, and they're talking about adjunct teachers, and they're talking about having mentors assigned to them. Because just because you know the subject matter doesn't mean you can communicate. She's not opposed to alternative tracks to get into teaching, but you've got to make sure that those people not only have subject matter knowledge, but can communicate.
Tony Bennett, meantime, has applied to be the state school superintendent in Florida. Been a lot of speculation that his electoral defeat would simply lead to a better job.
Well, let me start by saying that this particular thing that was passed at the state board this week is something they've debated for a long time. John's correct. It's been on the table for a long time. They've debated it. It's been a hot subject for a while. And, you know, they're trying to give schools more flexibility to put teachers in places where a lot of school systems can't even find teachers to put in some of these spots in classrooms. So that's what that was all about. As far as Tony Bennett's concerned, Florida would be a perfect fit for him because they're one of the most advanced states in the country on trying to do new things.
Many of the reforms that he's pursued
have already been done.
They were Jeb Bush's ideas.
Right, and Jeb Bush is a huge fan of Tony Bennett. Hopefully that'll help with him. I hope he gets that job because I think that'd be a good fit for Tony Bennett.
I'm tempted to make a warm weather climate change joke at this point, but in keeping with my track record this show, I will refrain.
Make it funny. Two decades ago, Indiana Senator Richard Lugar joined Democrat Sam Nunn of Georgia to initiate a program to reduce nuclear stockpiles both here and in the former Soviet Union. They were honored for their work this week by President Obama.
Now, I will point out it was Dick who took me on my first foreign trip as a senator. to Russia and Ukraine and Azerbaijan. We were there to see the Cooperative Threat Reduction Program in action. And the first thing I learned is that when Dick Lugar travels overseas, it's not a junket. You know, we didn't stop and look at a lot of beautiful sights and sort of lounge around on some shopping excursions. He wore out every 25-year-old staffer that was part of this delegation.
John Schwanes, would Dick Lugar have received that sort of honor had he not been leaving the Senate at this point?
I think he would have received some attention and some recognition for what he has done with what is most broadly called Lugar Nun or Nun Lugar, because it's the 20th anniversary. IU had a symposium on it in the fall. Other institutions that study public policy and these types of issues have heeded the fact that we're at this milestone. And let's also face the fact that we're dealing with a lot of lingering issues. The problem has not been resolved, although I think progress has been made. You look at Roe.
And the treaty's going to expire next spring.
There are a lot of reasons why, if you look around the globe and some of the instability, why this issue is still as much of a front burner, or should be as much of a front burner issue as always. So it gets a little bit of extra bell and whistle, I'm sure, a little extra nice quality of the comments from the president, but he still would be getting accolades, I think.
Is it okay for Dick Lugar to be the president's favorite Republican at this point?
He ought to be, and it's really unfortunate that he won't be able to work from inside the operation, because with the expiration of the treaty and really the changed landscape in the meantime, there's no more expert person than Richard Lugar when it comes to this, and it's still a very dangerous world. And I hope that he has a long time to work on this issue outside the Congress, because really, given Congress's makeup right now and the difficulty you have trying to get anything done, maybe he'll have better success outside the Senate, and maybe he and the president can work together in these 4 years to try to get something done to ensure that we don't all blow up.
And Lugar has said publicly that he intends to pursue nuclear weapons reduction after he leaves the Senate. We also learned today that he's going to have a position at the University of Indianapolis helping educate young people.
Mm-hmm. I think that's great. He has a lot to contribute. There's no question about it. And there are any number of special envoy positions in that regard that he could fill for the president. And obviously, the president values his judgment. So I think there's a very substantial role for him going forward.
So it's suggested that he should work with Bill Clinton and
I think he's prepared. I think that he's had enough of partisan politics for the rest of his life. And I think he's prepared to work with anybody whose intentions are the same as his, and that is to reduce the nuclear threat. And I don't think he cares what side of the aisle they come from.
And he's not interested in retiring, obviously.
No, and as we get closer to the time that this agreement expires, I think you're going to see the Obama administration call on Senator Lugar to help make sure that it doesn't, that it's continued, because as John said, it's too important not to. Sam Nunn and Dick Lugar should have won the Nobel Peace Prize for this.
I mean, they were nominated.
We are clearly safer today because of what the two of these men did.
They still might.
In this area.
Still might.
And also, you know, that's where Senator Obama got to know Dick Lugar, working on this very issue.
Because he took Sam Nunn's place once Sam Nunn left the Senate.
Right. Exactly. And that's how they got to know each other. So I look for Lugar to be engaged in this, and let's hope he is.
You know,
successfully.
And one other positive about the new role, what I imagine will be several new roles with other universities, for instance, is the suggestion, as well as University of Indianapolis. But this one gives him the ability, the platform, from which he can continue some of the mentorships and work with young people at the high school level and other groups that he's been doing for, 36 years. I think I went to Lugar Symposium as a high school student. And then later,
you had to be at the top of your class to do that, didn't you?
Yeah, maybe you didn't. Maybe I wanted to go. But I will say, we've all been there as speakers over the years presenting those. And I think we've all been amazed at the quality of the young people who have come through there. And anything we can do, and anything Dick Lugar can do to harness that and point that in the right direction and maybe point it toward public service, terrific.
Moving on, the chairman of the Education Committee in the State Senate will not pursue the teaching of creationism in Indiana schools in 2013. Instead, Senator Dennis Cruz will pursue a measure calling for truth in education. He says it will encourage students to question a broad range of topics. Teachers must then demonstrate that what they are teaching is true. Tennessee recently adopted a similar proposal over the objections of the governor there, Ann Delaney. Will that proposal evolve into a new state law?
That proposal, I mean, Dennis Cruz is a nice man, but that proposal pegs the goofy meter. I mean, this isn't the scope strike. Who decides what the truth is? The curriculum is established by the Board of Education.
This is clearly the back door to creationism.
Well, I know. How do you prove creationism? Okay, and creationism is one interpretation, and you know some of us don't take it literally, but that's one interpretation of the evolution or the beginning of life. But there are a bunch of other religions out there, all of whom have different ideas. Do we teach all of those, or do we base it on science? You know, he can read whatever he wants to read in church, and he can believe whatever he wants to believe, and that's terrific. But it's like saying the world is flat. Okay, the science doesn't support it. It's not, Mike. I'm sorry. Your view of life may be, but not the world. It's goofy.
Well, but it opens the door to all sorts of potential problems. I mean, a student can question pi, and the teacher's got to spend his time figuring out how we came to 3.14, right?
I thought you meant pi.
Sure.
Seriously, doesn't this seem problematic?
Look, it's going to be interesting to read this bill. And the reason I say that is for the very reasons, some of the reasons that Dan stated. You know, how do you get your arms around this? How do you define it in such a way that it makes sense that you can have that interaction he says he's asking for? And I think that's going to be the difficulty in this, is to try to get your arms around this to the point where it makes sense and was something that people could understand and actually apply on a daily basis. Well, that's the problem.
In the school districts now, they have this educational license, for want of a better term, where you argue both sides of a particular issue as long as the teacher, as I understand it, doesn't express personal opinions. You're already taught to question. That's part of the educational system in this country, for goodness sake.
Well, and to your point, Jim, there is no secret this is the back door to creationism. And in fact, the group with which he's working out of Seattle, the Discovery Institute, I believe is the name, has said as much. This is by pursuing an academic freedom theme, it maybe is more palatable and maybe more constitutional. And Tennessee has, I said maybe, that's the theory, has tried it. But I think what will happen, conservatives who might be somewhat supportive, I think there will be the business community, the tech community coming forward and say, we're trying to position ourselves as sort of the biotech corridor here. Don't do this if we really want to attract other companies that are up-and-comers on the technology front. Don't make us look as if we're some backwater. So I think that will give conservatives some cover when the Eli Lillys, I'm not saying they will, but others who...
You're calling this crazy.
Goofy!
You know, I think there is one interesting aspect of this that we really haven't quite covered yet, and that is, really, this is as big a threat to the established procedures we have for determining education, like we were talking about the Board of Education before, because it really renders them moot. If you take it to its nth degree and you follow through on the logical conclusions, then it's just a free-for-all, and it's whatever a local school district or even a local teacher thinks is the thing to do. And as long as they can defend it, because how do you prove it, then it makes everything else irrelevant.
And why stop with science? Theoretically, you could say it's history. And I can see Holocaust deniers saying, and we've seen those battles in some college
Kennedy
campuses.
Kennedy assassination conspiracy
theorists. I mean, the Holocaust didn't happen. Can I prove it? Well, I guess we have to get everybody in a plane and fly
And having the legislature determine what's true. I mean, you have a Board of Education to establish the curriculum, okay? And then you have the textbooks as a guide. Excuse me?
He just indicted the entire legislature.
With all due respect, there are things that they're qualified to do and things they may not be quite as qualified on. And the idea that they know better what the curriculum in local schools should be is one of those items.
Moving on. Purdue University named a new football coach this week. Daryl Hazel has become the only African-American head football coach in the Big Ten.
Here's a program right now that's in the middle of the pack, but I want to be at the top of the pack pretty quickly. And I think we have an opportunity. It's kind of unique. When I took the Kent State job, people looked at me like I was crazy. They said, they haven't won there in 40 years. Why would you take that job coming from Ohio State? I bit my lip, and we went to work. And that's what we're going to do here, and we're going to win championships here.
Mike McDaniel, is that a surprise choice?
No, because this guy is a good football coach. And John and I, in particular, are thrilled to death because he beat Ball State in a last-second game this year, and it means he won't be beating us in the MAC anymore. So we're glad Purdue picked him. And, no, this guy's top drawer. He's going to be one of the best in the country.
Yeah, he had a great record at Kent State, no question about that.
And something's been made of the fact that he's African-American, but not by him.
No, I mean, it looks to me like
he's
the athletic director
coach.
Made a good choice. And actually, some people said that they did better than the Board of Visitors for their choice.
Wow.
I didn't say that, but some people have said that.
Can you prove the truth of that?
Yeah, I mean, can you help yourself?
With most things, it's all in the eye of the beholder.
We need truth in teaching.
She gets the governor.
Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanes of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast. Or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller. Proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Things can go wrong in a thousand different ways. Businesses need a law firm that knows the thousand and first. The team of legal professionals at Ice Miller is committed to helping put the pieces back together. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.